You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a look at the model minority myth.
Over the last year, the global pandemic has helped amplify historic racial tensions within the U.S. This includes ongoing racial struggles the Asian American community has experienced for quite some time. Mycee Vang of Sun Prairie has been thinking back on these experiences in her own life.
The model minority myth depicts Asian Americans as characteristically successful and less troublesome than other minority groups. Before the COVID pandemic, this stereotype has allowed the racial targeting of Asian Americans in the past to be essentially overlooked. Hmong Americans have a unique story. Not only have our anti-Asian encounters been unnoticed, but being lumped in a race that is inherently successful has caused other issues to be ignored as well. My earliest recollection of not having similar advantages or privileges than that of my fellow Asian Americans goes back to the third grade. My siblings and I were living what we believed were typical childhoods in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, walking home from school, being latchkey kids, and trying to keep out of trouble while my parents worked rotating in overnight shifts at packaging and paper mill jobs. But while I played on train tracks and explored abandoned train stations and warehouse buildings, my Japanese-American classmate received private cello lessons and studied classical music. I also had an Indian-American classmate who received solid academic and career guidance very early on in life. She knew exactly what she wanted to be when she grew up for as long as she could remember, a medical doctor. While most children at some point in time want to become a doctor, this friend knew what specific steps she needed to take, what subjects she needed to study, and to what colleges she wanted to apply. I moved away shortly after, but our paths crossed again when I was a senior at UW-Madison. I learned my old friend indeed was still on that career path, with plans to attend medical school in the fall. It's extremely rare for a child that young to carry through with such detailed plans, but the fact was that she actually had plans, a strategy, and was aware of opportunities before her. I didn't know there was postgraduate education until much later in life, and even then, schooling beyond a four-year degree was unimaginable. I can't help but think how different it was for the Hmong to be included in a race in which we didn't have the comparable advantages, skills, and education. The Hmong is an ethnic group from Southeast Asia with no country or nationality. We didn't have a written language until the second half of the 20th century. We were persecuted throughout history and repeatedly forced to migrate. It was only our participation in the CIA's secret war during the Vietnam conflict that we were granted refuge in the U.S. I seemingly speak of first world problems, complaining about not receiving private music lessons or professional career guidance, but when I really look back, we oftentimes were not provided some essential social services presented to other minority groups. Hmong children and parents were rarely considered for English language support classes. We didn't have sufficient guidance to help assimilate into our communities, to ensure basic needs were met, or that racism was addressed. I participated in numerous African American awareness and appreciation events, and I brought home bilingual Spanish pamphlets, but my Hmong parents were never able to fully comprehend the communications given to them or know what was really happening in their children's social or academic lives. Despite these circumstances, Hmong Americans have come far in our few decades in America. We have fulfilled American dreams. But just like the model minority stereotype not applying to all Asian Americans, not every Hmong experience is the same. In addressing the uniqueness of each minority group or individual can help dispel myths so that we can better understand each other and help each other reach our full potentials.
Mycee Vang is a writer who lives in Sun Prairie. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now to the spread of COVID and how emergency departments have taken stock in these pandemic times. The CDC has updated guidance and is now urging even fully vaccinated people to mask up indoors in areas of high COVID spread and universal masking in schools. Do you work in healthcare? What has your facility learned from COVID? Do you feel prepared if the Delta variant cases surge in your community? It's 800-642-1234. Dr. Richard Shimp is an emergency medicine specialist at Ascension Columbia St. Mary's Hospital, Milwaukee. Dr. Shimp, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. There is nowhere near enough vaccinated people yet to stop the spread of the Delta variant. What are you seeing? What are conditions like at your hospital?
Conditions at the hospital are much like what we're seeing across the state of Wisconsin with rising COVID illness along with rising hospitalizations.
Yeah, rising hospitalizations, and certainly we've been seeing hospitals filling up in southern states. If cases rise, do you feel your ER is prepared to handle a high volume of patients like we saw earlier in the pandemic?
We do. You know, early on the pandemic, we really had to learn on the fly in emergency medicine as well as healthcare and adopt with limited knowledge of what was to lie ahead, along with some limited experience in the treatment of this novel virus, as well as we didn't know that the future of how long this may last. So if there is a silver lining that could be said from a pandemic, it's we've learned a lot and we can apply those learnings, not necessarily limited to another surge in this, but really any healthcare situation. And so we've learned to be adaptable. We've learned to add new technology and, quite frankly, learned to add new clinical care to the treatment regimen of really all patients.
How have you learned to adapt, starting with that first one?
Well, you know, early on, it was our saying was that things are going to change with every sunrise and sunset, and that couldn't have held truer. But really, we became adaptable in really a surge in patients. And so we began using non-conventional treatment areas. And you may have recalled seeing military-type tents outside of facilities. That was really to manage large surges of patients. But even internally in the hospital, we learned to use conference space, large conference space to triage patients and maintain social distancing. So we added virtual technology. So handheld devices, as simple as a cell phone, a tablet, a laptop, anything with a camera where we could interact with our patients in a safe, socially distanced manner, yet keep high quality of care and safety. That was implemented, as well as further into the hospital managing critical patients. When ICU capacity was full, we learned that we could use our operating room recovery space to serve as intensive care units. So there was quite a bit of adaptability and innovation built in that, quite frankly, today we stand ready to do the same for any surge in demand of services.
I'm wondering, as you look around, how that impacts staff and whether you have seen the impact of burnout, of staffing shortages, of turnover, retirements.
You know, certainly the pandemic has really put unprecedented stressors on everybody, whether it's your personal life or professional life. And what was most important to us was to recognize that and really provide as many support services as we can. And that was as formal as employee assistant program resources, daily prayers, daily reflections. We built quiet spaces in our hospital that continue to exist today for associates just to get off stage for a moment or meet in private with their peers to share experiences. There was also entertainment. We continue today to host virtual 5K runs. There are food truck days, employee appreciation days, employee spirit days, everything to really bring a sense of normalcy back to the very, very serious work that people have been doing for the last 16 to 18 months and likely in the future ahead.
Yeah. I'm wondering, can you easily cover those ER shifts? Have you been able to make sure your whole healthcare team can be there without people working so many extra hours?
We can. Fortunately, we have been able to continue to serve, you know, both the COVID patient population as well as the day-to-day emergency department emergencies, if you will, with our current staffing. We have an incredibly dedicated team of associates in a profession where I think they're not afraid to step up despite some of the pressures upon them. And it truly has been a team sport. And it starts with the minute you walk in the door to the first person you meet through nutritional services, environmental services, lab, pharmacy, respiratory therapy, nursing, physicians. Everybody that touches the patient is such an important team member. And out of this, we have learned to really utilize those resources in ways that now have proven to be quite successful. So that frankly, we can continue to provide emergency care.
It seems, Dr. Shimp, you've made some really novel changes in the way you triage patients and how you use your workspace in the hospitals. But what are waiting times like in your ER? Has that been affected by the volume of patients?
You know, it really hasn't. We've been fortunate to have rapid triage and a, quote, pull-to-full model where we essentially historically have eliminated triage and brought patients directly back to the treatment area where triage would take place. So we really haven't seen an appreciable change in triage. We do remain prepared, however, that if surges were to return, we could turn on the virtual technology today and begin that virtual triage to continually meet these expectations of providing care in a safe, high quality and efficient manner, despite the conditions and environment around us.
We have Dr. Richard Shimp specializing in emergency medicine in Milwaukee as we look at how ERs have changed in the pandemic. Do you work in an ER? What was it like during the surge in COVID cases? How would you compare operations then and now? Has your ER made any changes that are here to stay? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Shimp here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The COVID surge across the country is putting pressures on hospitals once again at a time when some are busy catching up with surgeries and elective procedures that were put on hold earlier in the pandemic. What is the situation like at your hospital? How is staffing? What about recruitment of new nurses and other roles on the healthcare team? Can you fill open jobs? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Dr. Richard Shimp is an emergency medicine specialist at Ascension Columbia St. Mary's Hospital, Milwaukee. He's with us for about 9 more minutes. Dr. Shimp, is Ascension Wisconsin requiring its employees to get vaccinated for COVID?
For the safety of the community that we serve, as well as for our associates, Ascension will require COVID-19 vaccination for all associates by November 12th.
How is uptake currently, would you say?
Uptake currently is aligning with what we're seeing across both Wisconsin and national, and roughly speaking, two-thirds of healthcare professionals in the area with vaccination.
And when you talk about the COVID vaccine with people who come through your ER, are there ways for people to get vaccinated on site right there while they're in the ER?
There is, and we're really proud and excited to have really addressed the disparities in healthcare, both racial, ethnic, demographic disparities that exist in healthcare, and it really became apparent during the vaccination in this pandemic. And when we were able to implement vaccination within the emergency department as well as the hospital, it's really made a difference. You know, these are not the emergency room, as many know, is not a place for preventative care. But boy, during a pandemic, we learned quite quickly that this is a great opportunity to provide preventative services such as vaccination. And so, yes, we are currently vaccinating in our emergency departments as well as within our hospitals for patients that are coming in with conditions completely unrelated to the pandemic.
What reception are you getting when you are offering these COVID vaccines in the hospital?
You know, it's a personal decision, but it's given us opportunity to answer questions with the patient in a private manner, in a one-on-one manner. And I can tell you the uptake has been very good. There's been on the order of hundreds that have been vaccinated through this program just in the last couple of months. So we continue to be proud of this, continue to be excited, continue to really work in our mission of providing healthcare, high quality care to those most vulnerable in our community.
How do you see the pandemic affecting mask wearing long term among medical professionals in the ER and in the hospital?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, looking back in conversations with my colleagues over this pandemic, the one thing that we all seem to agree is that, at least for us one-on-one with patients, likely masking will continue into the future as far as we can see. You know, interestingly, prior to the pandemic, we see some infectious diseases, but never to the order and magnitude and severity of the COVID virus. And there were times that each of us recall we would wear an N95 maybe a handful time of the year in our careers, now wearing them nearly daily in high-risk situations. So I would anticipate we'll see masking for good reasons in healthcare for quite some time.
And then certainly those masks to your patients, they don't seem so odd anymore, I would assume. Or you wouldn't be like, why isn't that person in the surgery suite, for instance?
Yeah, that's right. And while masking is safe, we have to get used to recognizing our colleagues and our friends, you know, by their eyes and not their full face. So it has depersonalized the patient interaction, and we're sensitive to that and trying to take measures to really personalize care, as we always support at Columbia St. Mary's in Ascension. But there are challenges that have come from masking, and a lot of it has been personal contact and relationships.
We're talking with Dr. Richard Schimpf of Ascension Wisconsin, an emergency medicine specialist in Milwaukee, as we learn takeaways at this point in the pandemic in the healthcare setting. Are you a medical professional? What has your facility learned from COVID? Do you feel prepared if the Delta variant cases surge? 800-642-1234. Telemedicine, also a big milestone in this pandemic. What adaptations have you seen with that area in reaching patients via telehealth?
We like I said, you know, we've seen it both in the emergency department for triage, but we've also added the technology for an observation unit. So patients that may need 24 to 48 hours of care in the hospital we do now have the ability to have physicians round on them virtually, which has proven to be very satisfying to patient care. That allows the physician to see more patients over a period of time, maintain social distancing during a pandemic, but also continue to meet the needs of patient care. So I do anticipate that telehealth service will continue, but also opportunities for consultants to be involved with patients. You know, oftentimes consultants are in super specialists such as infectious disease or toxicologists. Subspecialty care is not readily available in every community across, vast reaches. And by leveraging virtual and telehealth technology, we bring that level of specialty care to more patients and give more patients access to specialty services. So that's been a very exciting adaptation from the pandemic that, again, will continue, along with post-discharge hospital-at-home virtual services and monitoring patients at home. During the pandemic, we have the ability to send patients home with oxygen monitors that we can follow each day and pick up changes that would prompt a visit to either the hospital or their primary care physician.
So really,
oh, those oxygen monitors would be connected. Those would be like smart monitors where you could see those signs, you know, through if they're like hooked up digitally.
Yeah, that's correct. Depending on the technology platform, some can be automated. Some are simply manual, similar to a glucose monitor at home where the patient would write down the values and then check in with their primary care provider.
What are you grappling with, Dr. Shimp? What is the hardest challenge for you right now at this point in the pandemic?
You know, the hardest challenge is really seeing the end of a pandemic. This has been incredibly impactful to our community. It's incredibly impactful to healthcare. And the one thing that we can all do to end this pandemic and get on with our lives that I think we all want to get on with is to have large-scale vaccination. We know that the vaccine in healthcare with experts, that the vaccine is safe, the vaccine is effective at decreasing illness, the vaccine is proven to decrease hospitalizations, the vaccine is proven to decrease death rates. And in an effort to keep everybody safe, decrease the number of lives lost, and decrease the impact that this is having upon our community. You know, I deplore people to get the vaccine. It is so vitally important.
Dr. Shimp, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Dr. Richard Shimp is an emergency medicine specialist at Ascension Columbia St. Mary's Hospital, Milwaukee. Just ahead, we discuss breastfeeding. A nutritionist is here to help us understand the challenges that people are facing and how the pandemic is contributing to those issues. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.